This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to episode 18, where we review the sword and sandal film Red Sonja, released in 1985. Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century, that's 20th. We post our next movie selections there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. So this last week was interesting. You provided me some news that there's going to be a new Willy Wonka film.
Yes, that was a surprise to me when I stumbled across that on the interwebs.
It looks like it's slated to release March 17th, 2023.
Okay, so we've got a little wait.
We have some time. But they announced the actor who's going to play a young Willy Wonka.
Mm-hmm.
Timothée Chalamet.
Yes, Timothée Chalamet. Which is just fun to say.
It is fun to say.
I found it interesting. One, we're obviously huge Wonka fans. We talked about this in the last episode. We love Gene Wilder. We love his Willy Wonka version.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I think the day after we released our last episode is when I stumbled across this piece of news. So I was like, oh my gosh, we're literally just talking about Willy Wonka and Gene Wilder. And now I find out, you know, we're rebooting this.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's going to be like a prequel. This is going to be young Willy Wonka as a young man.
Yeah. And I think they've heard enough negative feedback from the Tim Burton version that there'll be a prequel to the Gene Wilder version, which is what I'm hoping for.
Right. Exactly. But I have no idea. There's been very little chatter about this so far. So we'll see. Yeah. And we kind of got prequel glimpses in the Johnny Depp version, the Tim Burton version, which no one liked.
Yeah, it was real creepy.
Which, okay, Willy Wonka comes with a bit of creep factor anyhow. There's creepy stuff in the original Gene Wilder version. But I don't, the whole like...
This was borderline child abuse, I think.
Yeah.
The relationship with the dad, which is played by Christopher Lee.
That's what I was about to say. It's Christopher Lee, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so there's some, we love Johnny Depp. We love Christopher Lee. We love Tim Burton. We had high hopes for that. And that one was actually titled, what, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
So I think it was supposed to be based closer to the book. Again, a Roald Dahl book. We've talked about Roald Dahl before. But yeah, it didn't hold a candle to the Gene Wilder version.
No, and it's funny because we love Tim Burton and we love Johnny Depp.
Right.
But for some reason, that combo, you know, of that team with Willy Wonka, that just didn't work.
Again, maybe that goes back to the whole nostalgia factor. We just grew up with Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka. And so we loved it so much. It's one of the, is it just classic enough we didn't like someone tampering with it?
Maybe.
And maybe there's some diehard Johnny Depp, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory fans out there. Like, I'd love to hear from them. Like, what's your, why is this your favorite Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? And that might be a generational gap, really.
It
we're
could
old.
Be. But Chalamet, I think, will be a good actor for this. I've admittedly only seen him in one movie, and I promise we won't mention Woody Allen in every podcast.
But you might, though.
He was in A Rainy Day in New York, which is one of his latest movies, maybe his latest.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. Movie. You watched that sometime I wasn't here.
Yeah, he was really good in it. I liked him a lot. And I know he was cast as Paul Atreides in the new Dune reboot.
Yeah, when is that coming?
I think in December of this year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's already made and everything. They could have released it in December of 2020.
Oh, but they're waiting for a theater release.
Yeah.
Well, I know him from the Little Women reboot. Mm-hmm. Nyla and I watched, our daughter and I watched. Yeah, he's fine. I don't know.
It'll work.
He has a little bit of a pretty boy look to him, so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But I think he has a little bit of a otherworldly characteristic to him.
He does, yeah. He's definitely interesting looking.
Yeah, he has an interesting look. He could, you know, kind of has that space cadet type thing going for him. I think kind of like he's not from planet Earth, really.
A little ethereal. Space cadet sounds demeaning.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
Yeah, otherworldly. I like that.
Something we watched as a family, and this is one that it just fell out of the date range for us to review on this podcast.
Oh, yes.
Which is a shame, but it's probably the best dragon movie I've seen, and that is Reign of Fire from 2002. If you haven't seen it, we do strongly recommend this one.
Yeah, it's great. It's really well done.
Yeah. Matthew McConaughey is like super ripped, jacked, crazy.
Kind of terrifying
military guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. A real departure from his kind of pretty boy.
Southern gentleman
films from before.
Right.
And then Christian Bale's in it. And, you know, Christian Bale looks like kind of just a little guy next to Matthew McConaughey in this one.
Yeah, he does. It's not Batman Christian Bale, that's Mm-mm. for sure.
Mm-mm.
No.
But he does a great job. And, of course, Gerard Butler's in it and a handful of other actors. But
oh, yeah.
And this is from Wiki. I'll just give you a quick synopsis. The film is set in England in the year 2020, 20 years after London tunneling project workers inadvertently awakened dragons from centuries of slumber. And the creatures have subsequently replaced humans as the dominant species on Earth. And so what you'll find is there's a little pocket of humans that are trying to continue on civilization, but the problem is that the dragons have like burned the earth.
They
like torched.
They live off of ash, so they're just burning everything.
Yeah, and so it's really hard to grow food and have a community.
Yeah,
in those circumstances, so
because then you have to hide from the dragons.
But I do. I think this is one that's a fun watch. We did with the whole family. So normally this is when I would ask you a kooky question, something off the wall, and we would do list of some sort. But I want to save that for the end, if that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because it involves this movie, and I don't want to get too deep into this movie until we actually get to do a full review of the film.
All right. So we're going to get deep into the movie, and then we're going to talk about a quirky question about the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. We're going to switch it up.
All right. I'm game. All right, we're going to talk about Red Sonja from 1985, starring Bridget Nielsen and Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's a PG-13 action adventure fantasy, sort of a sword and sandals type flick.
Yes.
Yep. So we start off with this power-hungry Queen Gedrin. She wants to capture the talisman, which is some glowing orb that's going to allow her to create and destroy whole civilizations. And so she comes in to steal it. The priestesses that guard it were just about to destroy it because they realize it's become too powerful to control. But Queen Gedrin stops that, kills all of them, takes it back to her lair, except one of the priestesses escapes, which happens to be the sister of Red Sonja. So apparently Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, Lord Kalidor or whatever mm-hmm. his name is.
Kalidor.
He was on his way to help destroy the talisman before someone bad like Gedrin could get a hold of it, but he didn't quite make it in time. So he's got to find Red Sonja, get her to her sister, and the sister on her deathbed, because she's been mortally wounded in all of this, mm-hmm. she convinces Red Sonja that she must go and rescue the talisman from evil Queen Gedrin and destroy it before she destroys the whole world.
Yes.
And adventures ensue.
Yes. Very cool. There's also an element of revenge here because the same Queen Gedrin that stole the talisman had also murdered the
That's
family
right.
of Red Sonja, and her troops had been very unkind to Red Sonja herself.
That's true. We do see that in, the opening scenes?
Mm-hmm. I first saw this as a kid, along with the TV cut of Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, yeah.
Conan the Destroyer. These kind of sword and sandal movies speak to a preteen. And then to see Red Sonja herself, I definitely had a, preteen crush on her, being drawn to her strong resolve and ability to accomplish whatever she set out to do.
Yeah.
Attributes that drew me to you, my wife.
Oh, thanks. She's super like kick butt too, though, and can wear a chainmail bathing suit type thing that I cannot.
You certainly can kick butt, though, and
oh,
you have
thank
several
you.
Times.
Thanks. I can't put a date on it, but very similarly, I've mentioned this before, this would be like a Saturday afternoon, kind of like we've probably done yard work or something in the mornings mm-hmm. and we're just chilling on a Saturday afternoon or evening. This would be something that my dad would be who was the remote control controller. He always had dominion over the TV. So, but this would be very much something that he would watch. We watched all those same things, Conan mm-hmm. the Barbarian and Beastmaster and He-Man and all of those kind of sword and sandal flicks. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I saw it multiple times growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's character was originally intended to be a reprisal of Conan.
Oh.
which was star of the comic book in which Red Sonja first appeared, but the film did not have the rights to his name. So even as a kid, I wondered, why is Conan going under a different name in this? Because he looks the same, he acts the same.
Yeah, it looks identical to his Conan character.
Yeah, yeah. Comic book nerds would know this. I did not know this, but she debuted in comic book number 23 of Conan the Barbarian in 1973.
Okay.
So she goes back a little while. And so there's a character that shows up in the movie that kind of gives her her powers. And it is a goddess named Skathach.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Skathach. So she's Scottish Gaelic and a figure in the Ulster cycle of Irish mythology.
Okay.
She's a legendary Scottish warrior woman and martial arts teacher.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And so she gives Red Sonja these powers on the condition that she never is with a man until he defeats her in fair combat. So Richard Fleischer directed this film, and he has quite the variety of films in his catalog, including 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and The Vikings, both of which starred Kirk Douglas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fantastic Voyage, the musical film Dr. Dolittle.
The old original one?
The old original one from 67.
Okay.
Charlton Heston movie, Soylent Green.
Oh my gosh.
Which is one we'll have to review on this podcast at some point.
Yeah, we got to.
And of course, Conan the Destroyer, he had done that and then did Red Sonja. So,
I mean, he's kind of all over the place.
He is all over the place. I think he maybe did one or two more movies before he was done with his career. But
okay.
So why don't we roll into high fives?
Let's do it.
I'll get us started. I think the costuming, though quite ridiculous and non-functional... You have to admit, they're quite inspired.
No, they really are. Very creative.
Very creative, memorable. You know, the Little Prince, his outfit, and Falcon, those real red, ornate outfits, that little hat with the kind of spiky...
Very oriental, Asian flair. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the correct wording is to use for that, but definitely has an Eastern look to it.
Yeah. Those were definitely cool. Red Sonja's swordmaster teacher had these craziest shoulder pads ever. They had like... flags sticking out of his right and left shoulder.
Yeah, it was basically like banners or flags something.
I think we joked, like, what does he have to do when he has to run to the restroom?
I made the joke that every doorway in his village must be like 40 feet wide because how else is he getting through doorways? And why is not half of his tribe like missing one eye?
Yeah, that's true. He definitely looked cool though. Those costumes were cool. Breitag's men had the biggest, most uncomfortable headpieces ever.
They look like giant woodpecker heads on their helmets. I mean, they were huge, massive. Their silhouettes were impressive because of their headpieces.
Yes, and then Red Sonja's outfit. It's not the chainmail bikini you see at Comic-Cons, but very functional.
Yeah, it's pretty functional looking as far as these types of things go. In fact, I think this movie obviously took some criticism anyhow, which we'll get into, but that's one of the criticisms, I think, was that it wasn't sexy enough, basically.
Oh.
Like, she didn't have enough sex appeal in her character, which I think is unfortunate because she's a warrior. Like, really, people? This is what we're disappointed about?
Yeah.
Anyhow. I have to say, as far as the costuming goes, yes, there were ridiculous elements like 40-foot shoulder pads and giant headpieces that would not be functional in battle at all. But then the people that we actually saw battle the most, which would have been, I was going to call him Conan, but Arnold's character, Kalidor, and Red Sonja, they had very ornate costuming, but it functioned. Like, they didn't look like it was cumbersome to them when they were in fights and when they were battling people.
Yeah.
So I like that. I appreciate that. Like, it can still look cool. And, you know, we watch a lot of, you know, B movies that the costuming, what's the movie with the guy with the Mr. Crab as the hat?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forget what that's. Lost Wizarding World of Kingdom. I don't know. It's some crazy cookie name.
It's something that Mystery Science Theater covers at some point, you know. But, you know, you watch a lot of these movies with maybe a slightly lower budget or whatever, and the costuming just looks like paper mache and garbage scraps and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, they visited some local theater, just grabbed what was in the closet.
Exactly.
Stitched a few things together.
But these look quality. I mean, these look like nice materials, well made, maybe not the most functional if you like live among warring clans, but hey, they had a fashion sense, I guess.
Yeah, the priestesses at the beginning, they had those long kind of flowy outfits.
Oh, yeah.
And it looked really cool when they were wielding swords.
Mm-hmm.
That looked really cool. The queen's outfit with that face mask and everything.
I loved her face mask, yeah. She's got some scarring on one side that Red Sonja gave her in the younger days when they first, you know, attacked her family. And so that side of her mask is solid and you can't see the scarring, but the other side is like cut out and open. I just, I liked that detail because then you don't see, you're not reminded of that original conflict between Red Sonja and Queen Gedrin until much later in the movie when the mask gets removed and you see the horrific scarring on her face. So I really like that detail.
Yeah, you get the feeling that the director hired an art director, and the art director, you know, gave all these sketches, and the director took it very seriously and said, we need to make this happen.
You know what else I really appreciated is every, because there's several, like, people groups represented in this fantasy world, and each of them has a very distinctive look.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were very particular about that, and I do appreciate that attention to detail. That's that's just fun. In a fantasy movie, you should get that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like reading Lord of the Rings or playing Dungeons and Dragons or something, right? You've got this identity you can see in their costuming, which is, like, really makes it feel like a cohesive people group.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if you're going to have fantasy, that's costuming is the fun part of that, right?
Yeah. So another high five I'll throw out there is to Bridget Nielsen as Red Sonja.
Mm-hmm.
This was her first acting job.
Oh, wow.
So she was from Denmark, a 6-foot model. She followed this movie with a very memorable role in Rocky IV. As Ivan Drago's his wife.
Oh, yes. I forgot all about that.
And then a role in Cobra. And she ended up marrying Sylvester Stallone. And she's on her 5th marriage currently. And she was on that reality show with Flavor Flav.
Oh, yeah. Was that on VH1 years ago?
Yeah.
I don't even remember what that was called.
I saw it maybe a decade ago. And I was really disappointed because, you know, she was like a childhood crush. And then to see her kind of like, it's sort of a rehab situation.
Yeah, she looked rough.
She looked rough. She
everybody
she acted crazy.
On that show looked rough.
Yeah. But anyway, in this film, her acting is almost 100% physical with very little dialogue. And that's probably for the best for a new actor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, she is a very, like, I know she came from modeling, but she must have been an athlete because her movements and just the way she carries her body. And so, she doesn't look like a frail model. She looks like an athlete. It worked in her favor to have less dialogue and to be an athletic role.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And that surprises me about the sex appeal comments. I think maybe there was just a different appetite in the 80s than there is now. Because I think by today's standards, she's very statuesque. She plays the action very believably.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think she shows off her guns and just kind of physical prowess a lot. I think today that would... it would go over better.
Yeah. I mean, she's got to get a better haircut, but yes.
Oh, that haircut was terrible.
The haircut's like the mullet of all mullets.
Yeah.
Switching from her haircut, let's talk about another high five. I think the special effects should get some high fives here because, well, I'm assuming it's not necessarily pre-CGI, but most everything is practical effects in this movie.
Yeah.
Especially, they're trying to take a shortcut to get to the talisman, right? And they're going through some sort of caves. This water comes flooding in. And there's a mechanical, yet aquatic dragon that they have to defeat. And, of course, we're just talking about dragons with Reign of Fire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming this was a practical effect because it looks very real.
Yeah.
It obviously is, like, you know, a puppet of some sort.
Yeah.
But it looks cool. Like, it's believable. It's very heavy and metallic looking, but not clunky, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little weird that you would have something mechanical living in the water, because wouldn't it rust or something?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They don't really explain the backstory of this thing.
No, he just shows up.
But, yeah.
But he looks very cool.
He looks cool, and, you know, I'm assuming, I don't know, I haven't seen the documentary of the making of, but maybe it was on a track in the water going around quite a bit, because when Arnold is riding him and it's like pulling him all over, you see that for 15 seconds.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a nice long little video shot there of him kind of hanging on to this thing and it dragging him through the water. It's very convincing.
And then when they blind this thing, it starts rolling back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was pretty impressive, too, because even, like, say, a movie like Jaws, you see real footage of sharks, and then you'll see the big kind of rubbery head come out of the water.
Mechanical thing, yeah.
Mechanical thing. So they'll do that. But this here, they're showing you kind of like the full body.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it even comes out of the water at one point and it has legs, you know. Yeah. So, and they were, I mean, they looked as real as the rest of the dragon did. So that was, it was well done. I don't know who created it. I think you're right. Maybe there was a really strong art director on this film because they got a lot of that right. Yeah. Also, the set building was pretty impressive. I think you said this was filmed somewhere in Italy, like up in the mountains. So there's beautiful landscape here, but they did a good job, I felt like, with the set building that mimicked the people groups that you're kind of bouncing around between this people group and that people group. Their sets looked like that's where that people group would live. They looked appropriate for, you know, the kind of Celtic looking guy. What was his name? The big guy.
Brytag.
Brytag, yeah. His, you know, rocky kind of rustic setting fit his people, you know. And then we don't really see much of Havelock, where Prince Tarn is from, because it's already been destroyed by Queen Gedrin. But what you could see, there was definitely some of that Eastern element to their dwellings and what was left of their civilization. So really a lot of attention to detail with the set building and the, you know, the puppetry, the mechanics.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah, even the Queen's castle I thought was pretty impressive.
Oh yeah.
That room with all the candles and just her main room that she's got. All of it just looks really
cool. Just like gilded skeletons hanging off of everything in her in her main, I guess, her throne room.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird, but it works for her. I mean, she's an evil queen, so maybe she likes to decorate with skeletons.
Maybe.
Maybe they're people she's destroyed and then had their bones dipped in gold for decoration. I mean, that would work.
That's a good point. You know, the also on the walls were all these sad faces.
Yeah,
you know,
all the stones exterior look like they had grumpy cat face. Which is a little bit silly, but it was kind of interesting, too. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of liked it.
Yeah. No, I agree. The matte paintings looked really nice. The landscapes are really far away. And then it actually being filmed in the Italian mountains. I mean,
yeah, that was gorgeous.
There was just some gorgeous shots there. So
yes, for sure.
Made me want to go to there.
Yes, for sure.
I'll throw out a high five to Ennio Morricone. The musical score of Red Sonja was really good. That great main theme kind of sticks with you. Nice little trumpet part there with the melody. He's a pro. He did The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, A Fistful of Dollars, The Untouchables, The Mission.
Wow.
The Thing was a very big surprise, and one day we'll review The Thing. But yeah, that one stuck out like a sore thumb. Like, what? He did that?
Wow.
He won an honorary Academy Award in 2007 for his magnificent and multifaceted contributions to the art of music film.
Wow.
But then won a Academy Award for his score for Quentin Tarantino's film, The Hateful Eight.
Wow.
Yeah. So he just died last year, sadly enough.
Oh, that's a shame.
He lived a full life full of music.
Yeah, definitely multifaceted. If you think about, I mean, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly has, everybody knows that I Can't Whistle, but you know.
Yeah.
That song, everybody knows.
Oh, yeah.
And this had a very distinctive soundtrack, too. I mean, there's just so many on his list that they're so distinctive. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we'll dive into low points. And this one annoyed me. I remember this annoying me as a kid. And as an adult, it really annoyed me. For this being Red Sonja and her being the title character, it bothered me that there was a whole lot of Arnold saving the day, you know, and I get the whole, with a little help from my friends, you can't do it by yourself.
Sure.
But it really felt like the moral of the story was that even though Red Sonja is given the strength and abilities from a goddess, that she still needs a man to get the job done.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I'm not a feminist or anything, but it did bother me.
You may have just lost listeners by saying that.
Oh, well, you know. I'm not a anti-feminist either, if that makes sense.
You just don't like labels.
I don't like labels. But this is a movie about a really kick-butt female, and I want to see her kick more butt and not have Arnold jump in and save her from Brytag's men. But in the third act, Arnold's really putting in overtime. He's lifting up heavy beams, pulling up iron doors, moving fallen debris. But for the heavy lifting, I want to see Red Sonja doing most of the butt kicking.
And right.
So that one bothered me a little bit.
Yeah. See, you don't mean just the literal heavy lifting, because he literally like lifts things that are very heavy.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of his quote unquote saving the day, was moving things that other people couldn't move, which I get. Like, obviously he's a very large man. He's going to be physically stronger than her. Mm-hmm. But couldn't there be more cunning ways for her to go around the problem? You know?
Yeah. Use her brain a little more.
More brain, less brawn.
Right.
Whatever.
Well, but the other thing that bothered me is his brawn wasn't really explained. I think they're just saying, well, you've seen the Conan movies, so you know that he's really strong.
That's true.
So they're piggybacking off that.
He's not Conan, but he is Conan.
Yeah. Because Red Sonja had a goddess show up and give her that power.
That's true. So she should be like superhuman, right?
She ought to be, way stronger than a mortal man, I would say.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's limits to her goddess powers.
Maybe so.
I think another low point for me would be Queen Gedrin. She's played by, and I don't know that I'm going to say this correctly, but Sandahl Bergman. Mm-hmm. I think she had the potential to be a really good villain, but she just never gets very developed.
Yeah.
We don't see a ton of her, and when we do, her dialogue is super flat.
Yeah.
I think part of that is maybe the fault of the writers, but also her supporting actor, kind of her henchman, it's not great either.
No.
So there's not anything great for her to bounce off of.
Yeah.
Like, all of their dialogue is just kind of bleh.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't have much chemistry between the two.
Yeah.
You didn't really see him being her number two guy. And the guy that we're talking about is the actor. He also was in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
The German that got the medallion that burned.
Seared his hand.
Seared his hand. And then you see his face melt at some point in the film.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
But yeah, there's not much chemistry between those two. And I agree. You don't get much backstory on her.
Why is she so devious and dastardly? We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't get any backstory there. And we don't really, I mean, yes, we see her commanding her troops to do terrible things in the beginning of the movie, but we don't really see much of her being the baddie. We don't have a reason to fear her, you know, other than like she has dark hair and wears all black.
Right.
So she's the baddie.
Yeah. It was a little anticlimactic that Red Sonja had to fight her to save the world.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, okay.
She defeated whole armies before that, you know, or portions of whole armies. And now it's just this one skinny girl she's got to beat.
Yeah.
And she doesn't seem to have any sort of, she has a sorcerer that works for her that helps her kind of, I don't know, disappear and reappear in places.
Teleport all over the place.
Yeah. But other than that, she doesn't have any powers of her own.
Mm-hmm.
And you took out the sorcerer, he's gone. She doesn't really know how to use this talisman weapon.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have any control over that. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So you defeated her. It seems like you could have done that earlier on.
Yeah. Well, her whole castle was, you know, shaking to rubble, basically.
Yeah, that's true.
And they didn't really explain. Is she going crazy? Like, why isn't she concerned that everything that she's built and tried to, you know, this empire she's created, it's like crumbling.
And I will say, her henchman does try and say, like, this thing's too powerful. That's why everything is crumbling. We need to get rid of it. Like, we don't know how to use this. It's not safe. And she really just blows him off over and over again. It's the same, like, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to use this anyhow. I don't care that. I mean, she doesn't say those words, but it's like, yeah, so what if everything's crumbling? I'm still going to be the most powerful genie in all the world or whatever. I don't know. Whatever she thinks she's going to be.
So Bergman is 6 foot as well. She's from New York.
Oh,
and most of you Conan fans will recognize her as Valeria, the thief and the love of Conan's life.
Oh.
And she was actually offered the role of Red Sonja initially. And turned it down because she read this part of Gedrin and said, I want to do something different. I don't want to get typecast.
She wanted to be the baddie.
And then instead of things going good for her, she got nominated for a Razzie Award for Worst Supporting Actress.
Yikes.
I did meet her at a Comic-Con.
Oh, you did?
When she was in her mid-60s a few years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is she still with us?
She's still with us.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. She was in great shape. I mean, apparently she got into a whole exercise video program that she put out and things like that.
So she turned to the fitness world to make her bucks. Well, good for her. Good for her.
Any other low points you'd point out?
This is a mix. It's not really a low point. It's kind of a mixed bag. It's a low point and a high point. The kid who plays Prince Tarn. Mm-hmm. So there's this little guy, and we see him in other movies from the 80s too, right? He always plays like a martial arts guy. So we should have included him in the high fives too, because his martial arts, his movements, like he clearly has some skills. I don't think we're using a stunt double in there anywhere. Like,
no, that's definitely him.
This kid he's legit. Like, he's an MMA guy or something. Well, maybe as a kid he wasn't MMA, but I think he became an MMA fighter later, right? Mm-hmm. So, and he's really the levity in the movie. Like, his jokes and his like caretaker, whatever the guy, Falcon, the big guy that's always with him. Kind of his do-boy, really, is how he treats Falcon. Their comedy is better than any of the one-liners or little zingers they try and give Red Sonja or give Arnold's character. Mm-hmm. So high five to that. So I'll backtrack a little there. But low five to, like, he does... His character is meant to come off as very spoiled, very bratty. And so sometimes it's just a little overplayed and you're like, somebody smacked that kid in the mouth. Like,
yeah, it grates on you after a little while.
Yeah, it does grate on you after a little while. So it's a mixed bag. It's not really a low point, but it could be.
Yeah, there was that scene where the queen's servant is saying, like, help me, please help me. And then the prince runs in and he's going to save her. And then the queen jumps out and grabs him and puts a knife to his throat. It's like, I had zero cares what happened to that kid.
Oh, that's terrible. That's so awful. Yeah, you may have pushed the envelope a little far if nobody cares that somebody's about to kill a kid. Yeah. That's rough.
It is rough. But that is true. You know, we should have given a high five to the duo of Falcon and the Prince, because they really, their chemistry is the best in the movie.
Yes.
Their acting is the best in the movie.
Right.
Their comedy, any of their zingers that they throw are the best in the movie.
Exactly. They kind of carry the weight of the acting.
Yeah. Yeah,
in the movie. Sure.
And Ernie Reyes Jr. is the name of the little kid. And for him to be one of the best actors in the movie, saying a lot.
He's very young in this movie. I didn't look up how old he was when he filmed it, but he looks quite young.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very much an adolescent.
Mm-hmm. For this movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger signed up really for a glorified cameo, kind of as a favor to the producer. And much to his surprise, he was on set for 4 weeks, 3 weeks longer than expected, and became pretty much a central part of the film. Obviously, in all the marketing and everything, he was all over it. And even got top billing, I think, for the most part, and the marketing stuff. What did you think of his performance in this movie versus like other things we've seen him in?
I mean, Arnold is Arnold. He, you know, like, he's kind of the same in all the things he does, but I think that's why we like Arnold.
Yeah.
Because it sounds mean to say he's a one-trick pony, but he's Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's what he does.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's always going to be the big, beefy guy that is kicking everybody's butt and usually has some funny, like, one-liners here and there. I do like when he... I don't know if it's when I guess it's when he first meets Red Sonja, or when they first have a conversation. Basically, she tells him her thing. No man can have me unless he can beat me in a fair fight. Mm-hmm. And he says, so the only man that can have you is the one who's trying to kill you? That's logic. I do like that line a lot.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Real good logic. You only want a man who's trying to kill you.
Yeah.
That doesn't make a lot of sense. So, you know, he's Arnold. He's Arnold being Arnold in this movie. So. Yeah.
We joke that he's not the best grief counselor in the world.
No. No, yeah. Her sister dies and he's like, get over it. Go do the things she told you to do. You know?
Yeah. He's like, the living have work to do.
Yeah. Basically, let the dead bury the dead and move on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, you don't want to give her 5 minutes to grieve.
Right. Let her have a burial or something.
Do something. But yeah, no, I thought he was good. I liked his interaction with Ernie Reyes Jr., the kid.
Oh, yes, Prince Tarn.
Yeah, when Prince Tarn jumps on his back when they were having the duel, you know, with Red Sonja. And he growls at the kid. I thought the interaction was pretty good.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, but it wasn't enough to give him a high five. I wonder why that is. I think in Conan, he's so much more iconic and he carries the movie.
Right.
I guess some of the romance of this, I don't know if I bought into.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe now knowing the backstory you just gave us, that he was really supposed to just be like a cameo appearance and then ended up being on set for 4 weeks, you know, maybe that comes out in some of his acting too. He's not maybe putting his all into it because he just thought, like, I'm just here as a, you know, name dropping. Yeah, doing a favor, right? And so maybe that's why we're missing some of that connection there, is because maybe he wasn't there 110%. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Or maybe, you know, that's just what happens when you decide, you make a directorial decision later to say, oh, let's make this more about Arnold, but we weren't really filming that direction to begin with. I don't know. These are all speculations on my part, because I know nothing about movie making.
But you know what? I said they have no chemistry. I think I did see where they did have a relationship.
Oh, did
during
they?
This movie or after this movie.
Oh, really?
So there was something brewing there, but I don't know, just something with his, when he's like, Sonya, we must blind him.
Oh, yeah.
It's our only chance. And you're like, how do you know that's your only chance?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I think we were supposed to, and that was when they were fighting the mechanical dragon when the water's rushing in. I think we were supposed to think that the water was eventually going to rise high enough they were all going to drown.
Yeah.
But that never really panned out. Like you never had that sense of, you know, you see that theme in a lot of action movies. We have that in Big Trouble in Little China. Mm-hmm. You know, you have that in the garbage heap thing or whatever it is in Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was like, you knew that was supposed to be happening, but it wasn't really happening. They didn't seem to be in really imminent danger, you know. Mm-hmm. Couldn't they have just climbed the walls and gotten away from the mechanical dragon?
It did seem that way. Because they got out somehow.
Right, exactly.
So why didn't they just leave?
They just climbed out once they finally blinded the mechanical dragon. So why didn't they just do that to begin with? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much of that's Arnold's fault. I mean, I guess he didn't do so great that I would give him a high five, but he didn't do badly either.
No,
it was
just,
like you said, it was Arnold being Arnold, and it was fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily an inspired performance, because we've seen him play this kind of role in Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Destroyer.
And it's much more viable. Like, you like it a lot more.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a stronger performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One other actor I'll mention is Pat Roach, who plays Lord Breitag. It's funny because when I grew up watching this movie, I always pictured him as a big fat guy. Because how he lies there, his acting shows you that, you know, he's like, he's so slovenly laying there when she comes up, and he barely even looks at her.
Yeah. He barely even sits up.
Barely sits up. And she makes a comment kind of about his size.
Yeah. Oh, well, and she says she's going to slice open his belly, even, I think, right? Like his big belly.
But that same guy has been in several movies. He was a Bond villain in Never Say Never Again. He was an evil wizard in Conan the Destroyer. He's killed twice in Raiders of the Lost Ark by Indiana Jones. Then the famous scene that I most remember him for is that bare knuckle fight that he has with Indiana Jones in front of the plane with the propeller.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he knocks Indiana Jones down, and Indiana Jones basically like points or something, looks at the plane propeller. This guy turns around, and the propeller like slices him up.
Yeah, he gets
very memorable demise.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
But that guy is not fat at all. I mean, he's like ripped.
I think that was part of his character. He was supposed to be kind of like, everything comes easy to me. I've got all these, you know, warriors with giant woodpecker headdresses.
Yeah.
And we just defeat everyone. Everyone has to pay me tribute to go this way.
Mm-hmm.
But the actor they picked to portray that, his voice and his mannerisms portrayed that.
Yeah.
But physically, he's not that guy.
Yeah, yeah. But so, I mean, to me, it's excellent acting because, you know, he pulled it off.
Right.
And the way he talked to her, too, I liked their interaction.
Yeah. No, it was very funny.
Yeah. One other topic I wanted to bring up is the subject of fantasy films in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like universally, fantasy films are disregarded as trash or dumb. Or, you know, like, unless it's something of the budget and the seriousness of, say, Lord of the Rings.
Right, right. Peter Jackson.
Yeah. So I just wonder why that is. And you and I were talking about it a little bit earlier. Is it a chicken or egg thing? Because there are a ton of really bad kind of ripoffs of Conan out there.
Oh, yeah.
Sword and sandal flicks that are just really poor.
Yes.
Because they're pretty easy to do. You know, you get some bodybuilders out there with swords, and they run around in a desert or somewhere. And,
right, right.
You know, so it's pretty easy to make one budgetary-wise, right?
Yeah.
But there are several films like this one, and we're going to read through our comments from our social media, but there wasn't a single negative comment about this film.
Right.
Like, a ton of people really like this movie. And that's not what you see in Rotten Tomatoes.
No, I was saying, did I mention the Rotten Tomatoes score earlier?
And We watched a Siskel and Ebert review of this, and they just laugh at it, how dumb it was.
Oh, yeah. You can read the critics' responses on Rotten Tomatoes, too, and it's rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no love lost there.
And I think sci-fi has the same problem to a lesser extent, that it's easy to make fun of a sci-fi movie. I mean, if you have some aliens, you know, you have a spaceship, you have some story in space.
Right.
Like, it's easy to, like, just make fun of that or break, you know.
Yeah,
kind of have that breakdown.
To be cheesy.
Yeah. To even just disregard it, you, no matter what the quality is.
Oh, right.
It's quick to, like, change people's, it's easy to change people's opinions, I think.
Right.
So these critics have a lot of power in their hands.
Oh, yeah.
And I think maybe there was a, perhaps, I'm just speculating. So Conan hit really big. Mm-hmm. Like, it was. And then Conan the Destroyer hit, and it was far less successful.
Huh.
And by this time, we have a third movie, second one made by Richard Fleischer and this same group.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, you know, it was too easy to just assassinate it and take it out.
Uh-huh.
Because it's one of those things where, like, you can just throw out there that I think this movie's stupid. Look at him running around with swords.
Right, right.
Like, I don't know. Like, it's easy to just say this is dumb, you shouldn't see it. And then everybody kind of jump on that bandwagon.
Right, right.
And I think it's kind of a bold critic that comes out against that and says, well, this is a good movie. I like it. It has several redeeming qualities. Is it Citizen Kane? No.
Right, right. But yeah, you're right. I think once the consensus has been put out there, it's tough to go against that, go against the grain.
Yeah. And so it's just an observation. Again, I don't know if it's chicken or egg thing where you think of the top fantasy films of all time, there's not a whole lot of them, especially in the sword and sandal genre. Like, how many of them are just highly regarded critically and commercially? And it's
not a lot.
Super short list.
Yeah.
All right. Final summations. What say ye, Kim? Yay or nay?
Well, it's a yay for me, not for like super resounding reasons. It's not like a high yay, but it's a yay because it's a fun, like you said, it's a fun sword and sandals flick. If it were on a rainy Saturday afternoon, would I watch it? Yes, I probably would watch it. So that gets a yay for me.
Mm-hmm. It's a yay for me as well. A big part of that is the nostalgia factor, I'm mm-hmm. sure. But I did enjoy the performances. Like we said, I enjoyed the backdrops, the costuming.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the fighting. I did like the dynamic between Falcon and the Prince. And I enjoyed Bridget Nielsen in her debut. I thought she did a pretty good job. So I did want to go through some of our social media because there were some good, encouraging comments here.
It's funny to me because our social media does not reflect the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah.
Because the Rotten Tomato scores are pretty abysmal for this movie.
Yeah. So I don't know. How do you get a Rotten Tomato score to go up? Does people have to apply for that?
You know, I heard an interesting commentary on this recently. I think I heard this on NPR, maybe on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me or something. But basically, Paddington 2 replaced, over the past year or so, 6 months maybe, replaced Citizen Kane as like the most highly acclaimed movie of all time or something on Rotten Tomatoes, just because of the way their scoring system works. And I wish I understood it better so I could explain it better.
Yeah.
But it's just basically nobody came out really against Paddington 2.
Yeah.
And like one critic had words or thoughts about Citizen Kane. And so it knocked Citizen Kane under Paddington 2. I don't know. So I, you know, you have to kind of hold those numbers lightly. Mm. It's interesting to talk about, but
yeah.
Does it always represent reality?
No.
It's probably skewed in some way.
I'm sure. Well, on our Instagram, Chris Noel, a friend of ours.
Oh, yeah, Chrissy.
Chrissy, she says, I totally love this movie, LOL. So that's a guilty pleasure right there, I think.
Yes.
Edric Money says, actually underrated. I enjoyed this film quite a bit.
See, there you go.
Wendy Pineapples said,
hey, Wendy.
This is my sister. One of our childhood favorites. We watched the edited for TV version, of course.
Yep.
Kelstar.ak said, I watched this again a couple weeks ago. It took me right back to my teenage years. Love it. Handful of emojis. We have one that looks like it's in Italian.
Oh, wow. Wish I could read that.
Yeah. I think it's saying it's unique. Nielsen is classy and beautiful and charming.
I didn't know you could read Italian, Hans.
Well, I'm just picking out words based on my knowledge of Latin.
Oh, yes.
Which
your
is
knowledge.
Extensive.
Your extensive knowledge of Latin.
This was cool. So Momo Knows Blog said, us Gen X kids grew up with Ernie Reyes Jr. and tagged him and said, it's a no-brainer.
Oh, yes. You know why they grew up with Ernie Reyes Jr.? Wasn't he? He was Ninja Turtles guy, right?
Yeah, he also did Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Yeah. Stunts for them.
Yeah, he's the stuntman.
Well, what I thought was pretty cool that then, because he tagged Ernie Reyes Jr., that Ernie Reyes Jr. liked our post.
Hey, nice.
So our first celebrity nod, I guess.
Yay.
We've been acknowledged.
We've been acknowledged. Yay. I feel seen.
Then Victor M. Neem gave us 3 hand claps for this
All
movie.
Right. See, yeah. Rotten Tomatoes, what do you know?
What do you know? Attack of the 20th Century fans like it.
That's right. It's a fun watch. It's a fun watch.
Well, after the success of the Wonder Woman movie, there was interest in reviving the Red Sonja character for the big screen.
Oh, okay. Similar-ish vibe. I could see that.
And it's not the first time. Apparently, back in 2008, they were looking at Rose McGowan as Red Sonja, and that production fizzled. But this one is actually looks like it's green-lighted.
Oh.
Green-lit, green-lighted.
Yeah, one of those.
One of those. It looks like in June 2019, Joey Soloway signed on to write and direct and produce the film. And just earlier this month, in May of 2021, it was announced that Hannah John Kamen is cast as the Red Sonja character.
I have no idea who that is.
You would know her from Ant-Man and the Wasp. She's the ghost character.
Oh.
The one that comes in and out of phase.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, yeah, phase-y.
Yeah, yeah. She's definitely...
Cool.
She doesn't look like she would be a natural redhead.
No, I would imagine not, but I guess anybody can be. I've been a redhead before.
That's true. There's dye that, I guess, can fix that problem.
Yes.
But this brings me to my question for you.
Ah, here's Jeff's questions.
Jeff's question.
Questions with Jeff. And I don't know what we're calling that.
Yeah. We'll have to think of something for season 2.
Sure.
This one's pretty predictable, not real too big of a stretch.
Okay.
But if you were the director, the casting director, the overall producer, whoever that's in charge, calling the big shots, who would you sign on to play your Red Sonja?
Who can we get to play Red Sonja? Oh, boy. Well, immediately my mind went to people that we already know either have red hair or play characters with red hair. So... Black Widow, she often has red hair.
Yep. Gojo.
Yes, Gojo. But we see Scarlett Johansson in a lot of things. So, I don't know. I think I'd want to go outside the box.
Yeah.
And Bridget Nielsen's very tall, right? Like, she's like 6 foot.
6 foot,
I don't think Scarlett Johansson's super tall.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I mean, not that you have to be a duplicate of Bridget Nielsen, but it does work with this character to have a kind of tall, imposing, strong woman, right? Let's see. Other redhead, Scarlet Witch. She's very petite, you know, smaller person. So I honestly have no idea how tall she is, but I know that she is kind of a, or has been, I don't follow her regularly, but has been a workout buff in the past. Big Bang Theory, Kaley Cuoco?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying her last name correctly.
Yeah.
But I think she could do it.
Yeah.
She's blonde, but like we said, anybody can be a redhead, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you said she was a CrossFitter.
I remember reading that somewhere a while back. I don't know if she's, or maybe she's paleo. I don't know. She's like, was into fitness or healthy eating at one point.
Yeah.
And she usually has a pretty healthy looking physique when you see her. You know, like she's got some muscle tone and, you know, she doesn't look like a wispy little person that's going to blow away in the wind.
No. No, and I don't know her height either, but if she was a little on the short side, you could always get some shorter male actors, too.
That's true. She's not going to be playing opposite Arnold Schwarzenegger, necessarily. Yeah. So just make your Conan-like character shorter.
I like that pick, because she has also kind of an interesting face.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just like runway model beautiful, but it's like an interesting prettiness.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would agree with that. I think she could pull it off. And she has like a fun, quirky personality.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really only have seen her really in the Big Bang Theory. I know she has done other work, but that's what I'm most familiar with her in.
Yeah.
But I like her. I like her personality. I think she'd be fun.
I think it's a great choice. It looks like she was born in 1985. So
yeah, he's still young enough to pull this off.
See, she's young enough to be physical, but she's not so young that she's like a kid and unbelievable.
Right, exactly.
I like that choice. So I'll give you two options.
Of course.
My first is Sylvia Hux. She is a Dutch actress and former model, but I best know her from the movie Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think I talk about that movie enough on this podcast. It is one of my favorites.
You love that movie, yes.
Definitely in my top three. She plays the character Love. She's a replicant, and she's got a meanness and a fierceness to her.
Yeah, yeah. She's not the one that he's like, the hologram he's in love with, right?
Right, right.
Okay, she's the other one.
Sylvia Hux hasn't had a ton of work after Blade Runner 2049.
Okay.
But I think she would be amazing. She's another one that's real tall. She's physical, you know, she could put in that performance.
Right.
She's, even though she comes from a modeling background, she, as evidenced in the movie Blade Runner 2049, she could do well with dialogue too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And pretty athletic looking, yeah. This is the thing I hate is when we get like a kick butt woman in a movie or a show or whatever, and they cast this waif thin model.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that she would break. You can't, you can't, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know? So I like a, you know, someone who looks like they can physically do the job that we're casting them to do.
I agree. I think most people like are thicker, right? I mean,
yeah, most of us are not walking around model thin.
Exactly. And so it's a little annoying when you are watching a movie, whether it be a superhero movie or whatever, where somebody's just a little beanpole and they're beating up like, I don't know, 6'5" muscle bound men like they're nothing.
Yeah.
You're like, that's just not
Not realistic. Yeah, exactly.
And that's one reason why I like this movie, Red Sonja, because Bridget Nielsen looks like she can hold her own. She looks physically imposing.
Right. And she's not huge, bulky, but she definitely has muscle tone and looks very athletic in her movements.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very believable.
So another one I'll throw out, if you go with less acting and more like physical activity.
Sure.
Because this is right up her alley. If you're a fan of WWE.
Oh, I know where you're going.
Charlotte Flair.
Yep. Woo!
Yeah, Ric Flair's daughter, Charlotte Flair. She is, she's got the bod for this movie because she's just jacked. Like
she's ripped. Yeah.
Ripped. She's tall.
She's very tall. And we have seen her outing us as watching wrestling, but no one's shocked by that, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But like we've seen her like do backflips off of the top rope in a wrestling ring. Like she's very athletic.
Yeah.
She's not just a hulking presence, like super athlete.
Yeah. She has the physical presence to make this believable.
Sure.
And if you went to like the Bridget Nielsen route where she doesn't do a whole lot of talking.
Right.
And just rely on her, you know, the physical aspects of the job, I think she could nail this.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Don't give her a ton of dialogue. I don't know. Maybe Charlotte Flair is an amazing actress and we just don't know that. But maybe don't give her a ton of dialogue.
Yeah. Surround her with some good actors.
She's a wrestler after all.
Yeah, she's a wrestler. But, and it's funny because this movie, and I think a lot of the sword and sandal flicks, you have a lot in common with professional wrestling.
That's true. That's very true. You know, going that route, I'll throw another name in the ring. Ronda Rousey, you know, she left, what did she do? MMA or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it was. And came to wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know anything about her acting chops.
Yeah.
And I don't think she's super tall, but obviously very physically fit.
Yeah.
And she would eat this role up. Like, she would enjoy this role, I think.
Because
Red Sonja is kind of already her personality.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, she'd be great. And since we're going down the wrestler route, there is a redhead that we like in wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Becky Lynch.
Yes, Becky Lynch. Little Irish Spitfire.
Yeah. But she's a little too small, I think. A little too short.
Yeah. Yeah, she's, I mean, she's got the muscle tone, but she is pretty petite, I think.
So what are we watching next week?
So next week, we're doing things a little differently, which I'm a little excited about because Attack of the 20th Century is going to add in a little book review along with our movie review. And that's because Jeff convinced us. Well, he had already read this. He's a huge Ray Bradbury fan. You've probably heard him mention that a bajillion times. Mm-hmm. So he has already read Something Wicked This Way Comes by Bradbury. And so he convinced me to read it. I think both of our older kids have also read it now. Or I think one Jefferson has. Read it. Yeah, yeah. Nyla still needs to read it. She has promised to read it. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, we've read the book, or we'll have all read the book. And then some of you have already seen the movie. I have not. So then we're going to watch the movie and we're going to discuss the book and the movie.
Yay.
So yay. That's the books Something are my first
very
love
different.
Language.
And then we'll talk about the differences between the two.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
So even if you haven't read the book or you don't want to read the book, you can still listen to the podcast if you've seen the movie.
Yeah.
Or if you don't want to see the movie, you don't want to read it, and you want to listen to our podcast, we'll allow you to do that as well.
And I will say, a plug for the book. I love books anyhow, but I don't like being told what to read. Mm-hmm. So I may have dug my heels in a little bit. Jeff's been after me to read this book for some time. Once I finally did start reading it, I had trouble putting it down. It is very well written. I think I'm actually going to read more Bradbury just because I enjoyed his writing so much.
That's
so
cool.
Stepping out of my Brit Lit realm.
Hey.
And trying out some new things.
It'll be fun. Something different for us.
It'll be good. Where can people watch this movie if they want to watch the movie?
It is out there on Amazon, and then it is a Disney movie.
Oh, so it's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. I'll double check that.
Yeah, but I think it came out in 1983.
1983.
Disney produced it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
So yeah, go check it out, and we'll come back at you next week.
Yeah. Enjoy your movies and your books.
Yay.
Peace out, guys.
Peace out.